Thanks, everybody, for joining our live stream. We're in the trenches with Dave Lapham, First Star Logistics. Unbelievable digs here at First Star Logistics. This studio is about as good as it gets. We're talking Cincinnati Bengals victory after a Thursday night game where the whole nation saw the Cincinnati Bengals with a comeback win. It was a tale of two halves. It was a Charles Dickens special. First half, not so much. You know, the offense really struggled. They went 1 for 5 on third down. They were shut out. Second half, scored every possession. I think converted almost every third down in the second half and operated much better on second down. In the first half, second down was the downfall offensively. They put themselves in bad situations, a lot of third and longs as a result. And in the second half, that was remedied. Scored 24 points and a half. And Joe Burrow was his magnificent self, as usual, 25 of 32. Wow. 78%, something crazy. 348 yards, 2 touchdown passes. He had 2 primary receivers. C.J. Uzomah had a career game, 95 yards receiving is a career high. He had 5 catches for 95 yards and 2 touchdowns. Tyler Boyd complemented that, 9 catches for 118 yards. So the 1-2 punch. That was Joe Burrow's big target. 14 of his 25 completions went to those guys, and 213 of his 348 yards went to those two players. So it was quite an offensive performance. Defensively, a big, big play when it had to be made down on the goal line, fourth down. Urban Meyer decides, I'm going to go for the throat. I'm just going to go and try to choke the air out of the Bengals by scoring a touchdown here and take a 21-0 lead. In the National Football League, wiser to take the points. If he had kicked the field goal and gone up 3 scores, might have been a little bit different football game, but he wanted that touchdown. He felt like he had the momentum, and the Bengals defense changed momentum right there with that fourth down stop. That was the only possession in the game that did not end in a kick. No punt, field goal, extra point. So in my mind, equivalent to a turnover. And the Bengals hold down the fort. They come out in the second half. They score in like a minute and 30 seconds. And off to the races they went. And ultimately put 24 points on the board and outscore the Jaguars 24-7 in the second half of the football game last night. So really finished strongly. And a lot of guys stepped up and played well in the absence of key starters due to injury. So overall, a good win, and the Cincinnati Bengals find themselves in first place in the AFC North at this point in time because they played one more game than everybody else, but they are 3-1. And until the weekend's activities take place, they are in first place in the AFC North, 1-0 in the division with a road win against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So all very interesting. Let's get to your questions. Let's get to what you guys – this is for you. This whole deal is interaction with our great Cincinnati Bengal fans. And I'll tell you what, the crowd last night was a factor. Well over 60,000 fans in full throat. And the Ring of Honor induction ceremony was phenomenal. Phenomenal. It really was. Kenny Anderson got his blazer. Anthony Munoz got his blazer. And Kenny Riley II got his blazer that his dad earned as a Cincinnati Bengal. Longtime corner, 65 interceptions, tied for 5th in the National Football League all time. So it was a great night. And, of course, the legendary Paul Brown went into the Ring of Honor as well. So they did that at halftime. Before the game, we went across the street to the new venue, the Icon venue, and had a big gathering of the Ring of Honor guys that are going in, as well as they brought 40 players back from the 1981 Super Bowl team. It was great seeing a bunch of teammates, and we had something to eat and drink, and then sat in a big venue and with a bunch of season ticket holders and Q&A, just firing questions at us. And that was before the kickoff to the football game. So it was a great night. I've seen guys I haven't seen in years. I mean, in years. So it was great. It was almost like a team reunion. And then at halftime, when it was 14-0, I'm thinking, oh man, what a dud! These guys, all these legends, come back and they're all up in the suites up here, and let's show them something. The second half came out and definitely showed them something. There's no question about that. Let's start with how are Awuzie and Bates' injuries coming along? You know, my understanding is that they're coming along very well. You know, I'm not a prognosticator of injury. I'm not a medical guy. But I believe that if this game had been a Sunday game, a full week instead of a Thursday night game with the short week, there's a chance, a better chance that they would have played. Awuzie has a groin issue, and Bates has a neck injury that he had. I think you probably remember he had a big hit in Pittsburgh and took him a while to get up. He was slow to get up, and he had, I don't know if it's a little stinger or what the situation is there, but I think that it would not surprise me if they're both back for Green Bay. Would not surprise me at all. I'm not going to make a declaration that they're going to be back for Green Bay, particularly when you're talking groin injury, because those things, you never know about those. They can feel really good, improving every day, and then all of a sudden you twist it or turn the wrong way, and you exacerbate the problem, and back it goes to being a bigger problem than it was. So hamstrings, groins, all those type of leg muscle injuries can be tough to deal with, but we'll see. Hopefully it's back against the Green Bay Packers. And I hope they're both back, because Aaron Rodgers, you need as many people, quality players in the back end against Aaron Rodgers as you can get. You might want to go with sub packages, having multiple defensive backs back there. There's no doubt about that. All right. Let's steady dropping them. Okay. Love listening to Dave and Dan on Bengals Radio all the way from Tacoma, Washington. How about that? Going to the Bengals-Chargers game this year. First time ever going to Ohio. Well, I'll tell you what. Glad to have you. First time at Paul Brown Stadium. I think you're going to like the venue. It's very accommodating, very fan-friendly. And, boy, that's going to be a good football game. You talk about a couple of good young quarterbacks. Man. Joe Burrow is playing at such an efficient level. That's the thing about Joe Burrow, I think, that is most impressive to me. His efficiency is outstanding. I mean, it's really remarkable. And once again, he teams up with his teammate on the deep ball. You know, I mean, it's a regular occurrence now. Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow, they're gonna hook up for 25 yards or more down the football field. It's happened every single game, all four games at this point in time. And at some point, they're going to realize that they can't just put single man coverage on the man. They're going to have to change up what they're doing. And Jamar Chase is going to start tilting coverage his way on this deep ball stuff. And at that point in time, guys like C.J. Uzomah, Tyler Boyd out of the slot, C.J. Uzomah from the tight end position, working short and intermediate routes underneath, you know, Chase stretching the field deep. And if you can attack every quadrant of the football field, now you got something special going on with your passing game. And then if they start emptying the box out to start cover all the, now you have Joe Mixon to hammer it up in there between the tackles in the box that's being unloaded with defensive players taken out of there because they feel like they have to help in pass coverage. That's when you have something special. Nick McDonald. Who got the game ball last night? Three game balls were given out. Nick, Joe Burrow got one for going 25 for 32, 348 yards, two touchdowns. C.J. Uzomah got one for five catches, 95 yards, and his two touchdowns. Tyler Boyd got one for his nine catches and 118 yards. So, well-deserved, well-earned. Defensively, I think Logan Wilson would have been another candidate for a game ball. He followed up a 14-tackle, two-interception game against the Steelers with a 10-tackle, one-quarterback sack game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Pretty productive. Logan Wilson is a player. Logan Wilson is a playmaker. And not to mention, one of those 10 tackles that he was involved with Ogunjobi, was that fourth down stop that was massive right before the half that kept the score at 14-0. Jaguars go up 21-0 in the first half. The Bengals scored 24. They came back, you know, and scored more points than that 21. But now you have to shut the Jaguars out in the second half instead of letting up the 7 points that were allowed. So you just never know. But that was a momentum shift I mean, the air started to come out of the sails of the Jaguars when they didn't get that fourth down conversion, and the Bengals kind of got a little pep in their step after that defensive stand. And then they came right back out after halftime and scored a touchdown in about a minute and a half. And at that point, the momentum had officially shifted. There's no two ways about it. Doug, all right, Lap, can you speak to the great play of the O-line last night? I'm so proud of them. You know, Joe Burrow said the same thing, Doug. I asked him in the locker room after the game, how'd your offensive line play? And he said, really well. He said, use the same words that you said. I'm very proud of what they did for me tonight. Was it perfect? No. Is it ever going to be perfect? No. You strive for the perfect game, but you very rarely get there. You try to get as close to perfection as you possibly can, but I think the offensive line is starting to understand what Frank Pollock is looking for, and they're receptive to his coaching, which is a big step. Everybody has to be receptive. And I talked to Jackson Carmen in the locker room after the game last night, and I talked about that very fact. I said, you know, the thing that I respect about you, Jackson, is you took the hard coaching. Frank Pollock was extremely tough on Jackson Carmen. He didn't care about accolades, didn't care about how great a high school or college player he was. Frank Pollock said, I can get more out of this guy. This guy has more to offer than we're getting right now. I'm going to turn up the heat and hard coach him. And instead of assuming the fetal position and saying, you know, I don't want to deal with this. Why is he picking on me? Why is he singling me out? Why this? Why that? What Jackson Carmen did, stood up like a man and said, I need to be coached. I want to be coached. I know this guy's a good coach. I'm going to listen to this guy. I give him a lot of credit. Not all players do that. And I think it's really helped him. I think he's made significant strides since the early stages of training camp. He's lost 10 or 15 pounds. He's in great football shape. He's got talent now. Jackson Carmen has some physical skills. There is no two ways about it. He's plenty smart enough. He was talking about all the instruments that he played in the post-game interview that I did with him in the locker room. The kid's a talented kid. And I think, you know, he's got a very bright future. And the whole offensive line is a unit. The thing that Jackson Carmen has going for him, Trey Hopkins, a veteran, intelligent veteran on his left, on his right side, Riley Reiff, 10 years in the league. He knows what it's supposed to look like. Both of those guys on either side of him, if he's got any concerns, questions, or doubts, that's two big-time security blankets. Smart guys that have played a lot of football in the National Football League, and that's got to make Jackson Carmen feel all that much more secure. And on the left side, big old Q, Quentin Spain holding down the fort, and Jonah Williams doing a solid job at the left tackle position. They're starting to play well, and I think it's going to continue to build. I think I always talk about the offensive line as a fist. You don't think about having to wrap three fingers and curl your thumb. It just happens. Involuntary reaction. When an offensive line's playing well, just like that. When the offensive line's not playing that well, you have one component that's not, you can't make a fist. Get the offensive line playing like that. You get yourself something cooking there. Brad Bollinger, I noticed Mixon and Burrow talking before that last drive like they knew they were going to win. After getting into field goal range, Burrow ran over to Mixon. Any insight on what they were saying? It was cool to see. I think you're pretty much right on. I think everybody felt like they were going to win the football game when the Bengals get that ball back. And they moved down the football field very, very quickly. And Joe Burrow, as we talked about, the little alley screen that he ran to CJ Uzama, that wasn't even in the game plan. It was in the playbook. Zero coverage. Zero coverage means there's no safeties deep. Cover one is one safeties deep. Cover two safeties deep. Cover zero coverage. A lot of teams use it in the red zone, and they'll crowd the line of scrimmage. Every player will be within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, linebackers and safeties. That's what they did. They crowded the line of scrimmage. They had no safeties back. Joe Burrow said, what's a zero cover zero beater? Alley screen. It's usually run to a wide receiver But the formation, the personnel grouping that were out there by formation, CJ Uzomah was lined up in that spot. CJ Uzomah's never run the play, never run it in practice. Joe Burrow said, I don't care. I know CJ Uzomah is going to know the audible when I put it out there. I know he's going to know what to do, and I know he's going to do it. And that's exactly what happened. So you have to give Joe Burrow a lot of credit for pulling that out of the game, of the playbook, not inserting it into the game plan in a very critical time. But you can't just have the quarterback the only one that knows. Everybody else has to know what's going on as well. So give a lot of credit to every member of that offensive unit when they decided to add to the game plan by extrapolating something from the playbook that fit that situation. That situational football is big as you're approaching the red zone. Joe Cullen, Baltimore Ravens defensive line coach. What do they do in Baltimore as they get near the red zone? They go zero blitz. I think they're going to go zero blitz. Joe Burrow sees zero blitz beater. Huge, sets up the chip shot, a shorter field goal. I shouldn't say chip shot, but a shorter field goal, much more makeable field goal for McPherson. It was big. Ooh, Jordan Beachler. Good question. Will Ricardo Allen and Khalid Kareem be back this week? That is the million-dollar question, because they're eligible to come off of injured reserve this week, but you don't have to. If they're not ready physically, they don't have to come off. And I asked Zach Taylor about injured players at the conclusion of the game in the locker room report and wasn't expecting to get much of an answer, and didn't, because, you know, they just came off a victory. And he did say he'll know more Monday. The players have today, tomorrow, and Sunday off. But these guys that you're referencing, Ricardo Allen, Khalid Kareem, Jesse Bates, Awuzier, all these guys will be staying in Cincinnati and going down and getting treatment on a daily basis, because they have to rehab from injury. And honestly, if these guys don't go to get treatment and then say when they come back on Monday that they're not healthy and they hadn't gotten treatment, they're going to get fined. So they'll take care of themselves. They'll go down there and they'll stay with it. They'll get treatment. They'll go through the rehabilitation process, and we'll see. We'll see if those guys, how many of these guys can step up and practice next week. Now, as you know, there's practicing full, practicing limited, and limited can be anything. Limited can be the guy showed up and ran one drill and stood around and watched the rest of practice, but he goes on the injury report as limited practice. Other limited practice might be he did everything but running team. That's a little bit more. He did every drill, really worked it hard. And then, you know, maybe another limited practice would be for a player didn't take all of the team snaps. He sat out a portion of the team. All of these are limited, and they all go in the same category on the injury report. But they're all different striations of being limited in terms of severity of injury. So we'll see. We'll see what the injury report says. We'll see how guys even rehab and recover on a bigger basis during the course of the weekend. Big time 89 saying, like the channel a lot. So let's go to Brian. Here's Big Time 89 saying, love the channel, Dave. Do a great job. Appreciate you, Big Time 89. Appreciate those comments very much. And I appreciate you for watching and listening. I appreciate everybody. We got nothing without you. You guys are what it's all about. You guys are the reason we do this. Brian, how did Carmen look to you? We talked about him a little bit. I think Jackson Carmen, talked to him, like I said, in the locker room report in the postgame show. Said, okay, you've had two NFL starts, one in Pittsburgh on the road, a division opponent, big hype. That's a big game. That's a big thing to be part of. There's a lot going on, not just, you know, focusing on your opponent, but there's a lot of extraneous, you know, the environment, the hostile crowd, this, that, everything that you have to deal with. Then your next game, Thursday Night Football, the whole nation's watching. The guy that sat behind you in homeroom your freshman year, he's watching. Everybody that you've met your entire life is watching on Thursday night to see what Jackson Carmen's doing for the Cincinnati Bengals. And the Bengals won both of those football games, and Jackson Carmen acquitted himself pretty well, pretty well. My thing is, I remember my first start as a rookie in my first couple of starts. I wanted to show that I belonged. I wanted to prove to my teammates in the offensive line, teammates on the rest of the offensive unit, defensive linemen that I worked against in practice, all my defensive teammates, that I belonged. I could compete in the football game. I wasn't going to hurt the football team. And that was my goal. And then after my first start, Paul Brown came up to me in my locker, tapped me on the shoulder, and I looked up, and there's the legend sitting right, standing right there in front of me. He said, "Young man, you proved that the game wasn't too big for you. Congratulations, I'm proud of you." And that was like $1 million to me, that the legendary Paul Brown acknowledged the fact that I did my job, hung in there, and showed that I belonged, and I could play in the National Football League. And I think that's where Jackson Carmen is right now. I think that he's showing that he belongs. He's showing that the game's not too big for him, and the ramp is going to go up. The graph's going to go up. And that's what you have to do. You don't want it to be like this. 1 week you're up, 1 week you're here. 1 week you're here, 1 week you're here. Coaches don't like that. Coaches want to know when they put a guy in the lineup, this is what they're going to get out of him. And it's not going to have huge peaks and valleys. It's going to be steady performance with a look, you know, always moving up, never dipping, always realizing experience breeds comfort level. You've seen everything. You know how to handle it. You're not confused by looks, by fronts, in defensive personnel packages. That's where Jackson is right now. I think he's a good football player. I also agree with what you're saying. Wilson's a player. Big time. Logan Wilson is a playmaker. Logan Wilson in high school played wide receiver and defensive back. And then he continued to grow, eat, training table. it just grew into a linebacker. But he still has the skills of a wide receiver, defensive back. He has great ball skills. He's tied for the league lead with 3 interceptions in the National Football League. More interceptions than any linebacker in the NFL. But he's tied, it's a two-way tie with 3 interceptions in the NFL. He's going into last night's game, he was 6th in the National Football League in total tackles. He had 10 last night, unofficially. So he's not going to drop out of the top 5 or 6. Plus, he had a quarterback sack last night. He had the big hit with Ogunjobi on the goal line on the 4th down play when they tried to run the read option. And Ogunjobi and Logan Wilson said, "Nah, baby, nah, it's not happening." I agree with you. Logan Wilson is a football player. Let's move on to Rod. After what you've seen in 4 weeks, do you think we can beat the Packers? I absolutely think we can beat the Packers. I don't know if we will beat the Packers, but I think we can. There's no question. I think that, you know, you have to play. It's almost intimidating when people say, you got to play the perfect game. It's almost impossible. There's always something that occurs. But what you have to do is you have to avoid a train wreck. You can't go into the game against the Green Bay Packers and not take care of the football. Right now, the Cincinnati Bengals just finished 4 quarters of spotless football in terms of didn't turn it over, no 4th down stops. You know, every possession ended in a kick. That's what they have to do for 4 more quarters against the Green Bay Packers. They're going to have to play sound football that way. No self-destruction. If you give Aaron Rodgers extra possessions, you're asking for trouble. Because this guy, the last time the Packers came here to Cincinnati, the Bengals beat him. And I can remember it like it was yesterday. I closed my eyes, and I see the fumble. And I remember yelling, "Ball's out! Ball's out!" Terrence Newman picks it up. Terrence Newman runs it back for a touchdown. You get an unscripted score, a defensive score like that, a special team score, something that's unscripted, that's not necessarily, you know, that you thought would happen. A turnover touchdown is big. That was the turning point against the Green Bay Packers the last time Aaron Rodgers was in town here at Cincinnati. I remember the first time I saw Aaron Rodgers play against the Bengals was up in Green Bay, and this guy, I mean, his arm talent is second to none. I've never seen a quarterback that doesn't have to worry about his footwork. I've seen Aaron Rodgers, instead of having his feet pointed toward the target, he had his feet parallel. And he just jumped and threw the ball 45 yards as he's running to the left sideline, running to his left, squares his shoulder pads up. He's running in this direction. His feet are pointed toward the sideline, turns his shoulders, throws it 40 yards down the sideline, drops a dime. And the receiver catches it, gets both, taps both feet down, gets out of bounds. I'm like, what? There's only one guy I've ever seen to be able to make that throw. Aaron Rodgers is unique. He's special. You're going to have to pressure him. He's played a lot of football. It's going to be hard to confuse him. Turnovers, though, will be a big, big deal, and you don't want to give Aaron Rodgers extra opportunities, and you'd like to give Joe Burrow extra opportunities against this Green Bay Packer defensive football team. We'll see. We'll see how it unfolds. Okay, I can't believe Dave Lapham is answering questions right now. Really? My mind is blown. He and Dan are the voices of the Cincinnati Bengals. Well, yeah, we're here. We're here. We're visiting. We're all fans. We're all fans of the Cincinnati Bengals. I will always love the Cincinnati Bengals because they gave me my opportunity coming out of college. They drafted me with the 61st pick in the draft. In those years, that was the third round. Now it would have been a second round pick, but back then it was a third round pick. It would have been a late two. Back then it was an early three. And I made it, played there for 10 years. They gave me an opportunity to fulfill a dream, a lifetime dream from boyhood, playing the National Football League. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm actually going to be able to get a shot to live my dream. Not only that, the first meeting I go to, I look up, and who's addressing the group? Paul Brown. What? I was considered myself a football historian. I loved, you know, studying the game of football and from the early days on. And realized the legend of Paul Brown with the Cleveland Browns. And he's my first head coach, Paul Brown. Bill Tiger Johnson, who was a Pro Bowl center with the 49ers, was the center when Y.A. Tittle was the quarterback with the 49ers for Y.A. Tittle, went to the New York Giants. Bill Tiger Johnson's my offensive line coach. How lucky am I? Paul Brown's my head coach. Tiger's my line coach. Man, I got to pinch myself. This is like a dream. I'll never be able to thank the Cincinnati Bengals enough for giving me an opportunity to play in the league, make a good living, raise a family, raise the family here in Cincinnati. My kids both still live here in Cincinnati. They've got children, so I've got the next generation of family here in Cincinnati. Four grandchildren, two boys, two girls. I'm a lucky guy, and it all started with the Cincinnati Bengals saying, we're going to take Dave Lapham out of Syracuse University with the 61st pick in the 1974 draft. I'll never forget it. I'll always be thankful. I will always be a Bengals fan and support them every way I possibly can. Let's see what we got going on here. Incinerated Ham. These names are awesome, Dave. Incinerated Ham. Dave Burke's my guy. Dave Burke. Without Dave Burke, we have no podcast, folks. Dave Burke is the hardest working man I think I've ever met in my life. This guy works more hours. I don't know when he sleeps, but I do know he works. All right. Incinerated Ham says, Lap, how beneficial do you think the extra rest before Green Bay will be? Bingo, Incinerated. Bingo. It's big. It's big. They got away with a victory shorthanded in the secondary. I do think that Awuzie. I do think that Jesse Bates, I do think that other players that may have gotten nicked up during the course of the football game, extra days rest, it's like a mini bye, and you can get your mind and your body right. Just four games in, you can get your mind and your body right. Those extra days are going to be huge, huge, and players need to take care of themselves, lick their wounds. The thing you don't want to do is just sit around and have adult beverages and do nothing but sit around and watch TV for 3 days. We had CJ Uzama as a podcast guest. Get up, move around, stay with your workout program, stay with your rehabilitation program. don't want a 3-day hiatus, you know, and decide I'm going to go somewhere and I'm going to party away. I'm going to party down. And that's a big temptation for young players, but you're 3-1. Take care of your body. Take care of your mind. Get ready for the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Big challenge coming up. I think the Bengals will do that. I think they realize they could have something special. They have the start of something special. That's for sure. Big time 89. Any word of Joe Mixon's ankle injury? My understanding, minor, which is good. Now, I'm sure Joe feels a little bit stiffer and more sore this morning than he felt yesterday and last night after the game, because you've got adrenaline coursing through your veins and you don't feel anything. I'm telling you, adrenaline is the best drug, natural drug known to man. And I do remember, you know, once the adrenaline wears off and you go to sleep, and you wake up and you get out of bed and you try that ankle or knee or whatever you think might be bothering you. It's like the Tin Man, oil can, I need some oil. You got to lube that thing up a little bit, start moving around, loosen it up. But my understanding is it's not a severe injury to Joe Mixon's ankle, which is key, because in the second half, Joe Mixon was a big factor as well. You know, he provided the balance. When they went two safeties deep, cover two, they creased them with Joe Mixon running the football. You know, when they brought people down in the box to take care of that part of things, Joe Burrow made him pay by getting the ball to his weapon. So a balanced offense where you can run the football, throw the football based on what the defense does to you. The defense can't be right. You know, Joe Burrow is always going to have the final answer. And Joe Burrow has the answers to the test. Believe me, there's nobody smarter in the game of football than Joe Burrow. And I mean that honestly. This dude, let me riddle you this, Batman. When's the last time you saw any quarterback, never mind a rookie quarterback? You know how the quarterbacks all have these big wristbands? It's a piece of plastic. In that plastic are formations and plays and all kinds of information. So they're in the communication in their helmet, they're getting information from the sideline. We want this play. And they'll look at their wristband. Joe Burrow didn't have any wristband. Joe Burrow has the whole playbook, not the game plan, the whole playbook in his head. The big play to CJ Uzama, the alley screen. We used to call it the jailbreak screen, because the defense, no safeties in the middle field. They all crowd the line of scrimmage and they're coming, blitzing. They're bringing a big number of people, so you get the ball out quickly. You run a screen. Now there's nobody in the middle of the field to pursue to make a play. That wasn't in the game plan. Joe Burrow said, it's in the playbook. I know it. I expect my teammates to know it. I trust the fact my teammates know it. I'm calling it. Huge. Huge. Gutsy call by Joe Burrow. Great execution by the entire offensive football team. Joe Burrow special. Gina, me too. Steady dropping M, voice of my childhood. Dave, when is your Ring of Honor ceremony? I'll fly to Ohio to support and show appreciation. Gina, that's so kind of you. It was emotional for me at the Icon Center when we had the dinner and, we had the Q&A with the season ticket holders and all of that. And I'm sitting in the front row on the stage, kind of in the middle. Here's Kenny Anderson, my longtime roommate, going in the Ring of Honor. And to the other side of me, here's Anthony Munoz, who I played next to right like that, the left side, left guard and left tackle. Here's Anthony. Here's my quarterback. They're both going in the Ring of Honor. It was emotional. And when I think about it, it still is. So those guys going in the Ring of Honor, Kenny Riley, unbelievable teammate, and the common denominator with all these guys, better human beings, unbelievable guys. I mean, cared about humanity, cared about their fellow man. They did great things with their life. They've done great things with their lives after playing football. Paul Brown always used to say, guys, when you get done with football, this is a short phase of your life. You're going to be a young man. You're going to be in your early 30s. What are you going to do with your life's work? What are you going to do with yourself? And he always took special pleasure in players that had a second life after football that was better than the first playing football. and all of these guys going into the Ring of Honor, Paul Brown would have been so proud of their accomplishments. Anthony Munoz, 20th year anniversary of the Anthony Munoz Foundation, giving scholarships to kids that could never even think about being able to be in a situation to go to college. Kenny Anderson, the Kenny Anderson Alliance, what he's doing with kids that need help in terms of medical special needs kids, building a residence for them, housing. Unbelievable the things that he's doing, as well as Kenny coached, won a Super Bowl ring, the Pittsburgh Steelers, coached with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Very multi-talented. Kenny Riley, all he did was head coach at Florida A&M and athletic director after that at Florida A&M, his alma mater. These guys, unbelievable success stories. Football wasn't the end of their life, at the end of their work life. Special human beings. Just to be mentioned in the same breath, being on a ballot, like for the Ring of Honor, one of 17 guys, I think it was, that was on a ballot, other than these guys that were going in, Anthony Munoz, Paul Brown, they're already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They were automatic for the Ring of Honor. And the two Kens, no-brainer, Ken Anderson, Ken Riley, Ring of Honor. Initial class, four unbelievable inductees. Just to be mentioned in the same ballot with guys like that is like unheard of honor. Crazy. Who we have next? Doug says, Gina, that is so true. Dave Lappin's like a friend sharing his insights like Joe Nuxall. I always love it when people do a comparison with Joe Nuxall. I take that as the greatest honor in the world because I had the pleasure of meeting Joe Nuxall. I know you're in Texas. I know you miss Cincinnati, but I'm glad we can provide you with a little Cincinnati here in terms of doing this podcast. But met Joe Nuxall again, just another unbelievable human being. What Joe Nuxall did with his charitable work, his philanthropic work was unbelievable, as well as doing great things with the Cincinnati Reds in terms of a player. 14-year-old, 15-year-old kid, youngest player ever in Major League Baseball history, Joe Nuxall, pitching in the major leagues. Are you kidding me? It's like a freshman or sophomore in high school. He's pitching in the bigs. Crazy. And then a stellar broadcast career, just a class act in every sense of the world. Just a fun guy to be around. People throw Joe Nuxall's name out there and put my name in some sort of comparison. Unbelievable honor. Oh, Jeffy. Hey, Dave, thanks for content. I'm wondering if we're going to start to see a larger dose of Chris Evans. Could very well. Seems he has some real potential. Looks like he can make a real impact in close games. Chris Evans, when the Bengals coaching staff was down at the Senior Bowl, Chris Evans out of Michigan got a late invitation to the Senior Bowl. He and Harbaugh, I don't know what went on there, but Chris Evans' playing time was minimal at Michigan. And the coaches noticed this guy at practice, this running back that would beat linebackers and safeties as a running back with regularity. Great route runner, great catcher of the football. Chris Evans can he's got a skill set. He can do some things. They've used him already this year as a slot receiver. Look for that to continue. You know, you can line him up in the backfield and then motion him out and put him in a formation and feel very comfortable that he's going to run around as well as any wide receiver and catch the football. Plus the fact that he can run the football. He does have a skill set. I think we will see Chris Evans. And as the season wears on, you know, you need to extend the rotation for players a little bit. You need to give them a little bit more break during the course of a football game. And Chris Evans can do that for P. Ryan and Mixon for sure. Nick, Larry Ogunjobi went down last night. Who can we expect to step up in his absence? Larry Ogunjobi stayed in the football game, though. Larry Ogunjobi finished the football game. And I think with the long week, this will really help Larry Ogunjobi. The fact is that a very encouraging sign that he was right back in the next series and did finish the football game is very, very positive. So another guy that this weekend is going to be getting treatment. I think you're going to see guys with Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off, they're going to get double treatments, morning and afternoon, because they don't have to worry about meetings. They don't have to worry about practice. So anybody that's hurt, get down there and get treatment as much as you possibly can to fill your days, the 3 days off. I know it's kind of, that's boring. Rather be doing something else. But, boy, it's going to get you back a lot sooner and you might be able to not miss a beat, not miss any games. Green Bay coming up. We'll see. So let's see what Kevin has to say. Lap, what's the key to starting the ball game? Let's see here. Lap, what's the key to starting the ball game like we play in the second half? That's a good question, because, you know, right now, as I look back on statistics, going into the game, the Cincinnati Bengals had only scored 7 points in the first quarter. They still only scored 7 points in the first quarter after four football games. They scored 21 points in the second quarter. They didn't score any last night, but they scored 21 points in the first three games. And now in the second half, they scored 24 more. And they already had scored 37. So now they've got 61 points in the second half, and they have 28 points in the first half. That tells you they're a second-half football team right now. They're finishing football games. You know, they've come back from a 14-0 deficit twice in their first four football games to get two wins after trailing by 14 points. But, man, you're living dangerously doing that. You don't want to do that too many times. You don't want to spot NFL teams two scores. And I'm not talking about a touchdown field goal. I'm talking about two touchdowns. You don't want to spot an NFL team two touchdowns and think that you're going to come back time after time after time. So they are going to have to figure out a way to get off to a faster start. I thought that was a key to last night's football game, because the Jaguars have now lost 19 games in a row, 11 road games in a row. So I thought a key was, okay, come on in the Jacksonville Jaguars, hit them in the mouth right away. Take a two-score lead as quickly as you can and say, not tonight. Not happening tonight, Jacksonville. The opposite happened. Jacksonville took a two-score lead. The Bengals' body language was kind of slumping a little bit. Jacksonville's prancing around the field. And then the goal line stand. And then coming out and scoring quickly out of the locker room at halftime. Shifted that momentum, and the Bengals mounted their comeback and won the football game. But against these pretty schedule gets daunting. They have a tough schedule coming up. Against some of these football teams, you can't fall behind and expect to play from behind against everybody left on their schedule and win a high percentage of the football games. You're going to have to come out and play well early. And they're going to have to figure that out. That's something with the mini bye week. Maybe the coaches can come up with some adjustments, and the players, it's all about execution. You know, come out and see if you can perform better at a higher level to start the football game. Steve Logan, I wonder if this is the UC basketball player. I wonder if it's that Steve Logan. Position changes toward youth may not be done yet. Deontay Smith and Trey Hill on deck. Very possible. I mean, Deontay Smith is they're very, very high on him. He might have had one of the best training camps, not of any lineman, best training camps of any rookie that the Bengals drafted. I mean, they really, really were excited about Deontay Smith. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, they've got the younger players are very athletic players. I think they feel good about that. If there are injuries right now, they can plug and play any of those guys. And Frank Pollock is doing a tremendous job of you draft and develop the double D. Drafting players, putting the bat on the ball, identifying good players is the first step. The second step is developing their talents to be able to be conducive to effective play in the National Football League. And Frank Pollock can do that. So these young players, like I said, I was fortunate to get drafted by the Bengals with Paul Brown. And then Bill Tiger Johnson, my line coach, unbelievable teacher of technique. Frank Pollock, unbelievable teacher. Tiger played in the game, Pro Bowl center for the 49ers. Frank Pollock played 9 years in the National Football League, knows how to teach technique. These young football players in the offensive line are very, very fortunate. Big time's back. Last night was the first time I ever saw the Bengals set up for a game-winning drive with complete confidence they were going to win the game. I've seen that before. it's not the first time I've ever seen that. Honestly, I 1975, the team that I played on in 1975, we went 11-3. We were a good football team. In 1981, a team that went 12-4 and went to the Super Bowl was a good football team. The next year, we went 10-4. Didn't even make the playoffs. There was only one playoff team. We didn't even make the playoffs. That was the year that we were in the division with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Houston Oilers, and with a 10-4 record. Amazingly, we didn't even make the playoffs. But that 11-3 football team in 1975, by winning percentage, that's the best football team in the Cincinnati Bengal history. We lost to the Raiders 31-28 in the first round of the playoffs, and the Raiders ended up winning the Super Bowl. We were right there, very competitive. There's been a lot of good teams in the Cincinnati Bengals history, but I agree with you. First time in the recent past that it all starts with the quarterback. Because, man, when old 14 came out into the huddle of the year, he won the MVP in 1981. We knew, as an offensive line, we knew if we give him another half a beat, just another 5/10 of a second, it could be a touchdown pass instead of a hurried incompletion. We knew that he had that talent. We knew Isaac Curtis, Chris Collinsworth, and others had that talent. We knew it. That's what this football team is starting to feel like with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow comes in that huddle, looks everybody in the eye. We got this, guys. Let's go down and win this football game. And guys are believing it. They're buying what he's selling. Done it twice already this year. Game-winning drives twice, finalized by McPherson, the rookie kicker. Game-winning field goals at the gun. First time he did it, he got Special Teams Player of the Week. I'm not sure he's going to get Special Teams Player of the Week this week, even though he did it at the gun. He missed a makeable 43-yarder earlier in the game, but I don't know what anybody else has done on special teams. We shall see. But to your point, you're right. You're exuding confidence with that, and it starts with the team knowing they have a quarterback that wants to be in that situation. Joe Burrow has said many times, I love being in the game when it's game time, decisions, plays that have to be made to win football games. He loves the big stage. Some guys kind of shy away from it. Joe Burrow puffs his chest out and just he relishes it. That's what it's all about. Al Stone, why hasn't Hodge gotten any snaps at defensive end after such a great season, even playing against first team offenses? Very rarely did he play against first team offenses, Al. And honestly, if Khalid Kareem had not been put on injury reserve, I mean, he would have been on the practice squad. He's bottom line is he's kind of come down to earth a little bit. He's only had one snap that I can remember seeing in the first four games. So they feel like they've got other players that they're going to include in the game plan at a much higher level, obviously. And we're not around every day in meetings, on the practice field. So if you've got a player that you think can help you, you're not going to have your job very long if you don't play that player as a coach. So he's an injury away, though, from having a more significant role. The thing he has to do now is study his playbook and study his special teams playbook. This guy has a size-speed ratio that could be a factor on special teams, but I'm not sure Darren Simmons feels like mentally he understands quite enough yet to be that kind of a contributor. So he's got to mature more mentally than physically to get more snaps in the football team. Coaches want to be able to trust the fact that players will not be making mental mistakes. It's a bad feeling for a coach. Like, when's the train wreck going to happen? When's he going to go the wrong way? When's he going to block the wrong guy? When's he going to do this? When's he going to do that? You can't coach with that kind of a mindset and feeling. Brandon Daniels, do you feel that we have to beat Green Bay to finally get national respect? Watching the morning wave and no respect to our Bengals. Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, like I said, Jacksonville's lost 19 in a row, 11 in a row on the road. So I don't think that by beating the Jacksonville Jaguars at the gun, the national media was that impressed, to be quite honest. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Bengals beating the Steelers in Pittsburgh in the last nine games, including playoff games, the Pittsburgh Steelers are 2-7. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are in a little bit of a struggle. So I think the national media, looking from the outside in, and they're not, you know, on a day-to-day basis studying, and they're looking more of a you know, less information, but just a quick opinion, then they're not as impressed yet. And you know, it's going to take a little bit of time. Yeah, beating the Green Bay Packers would be helpful. But beating the Cleveland Browns, beating the Baltimore Ravens, beating the Raiders, beating the Denver Broncos, these are all teams that are on the Bengals schedule. That's what I'm saying. Down the road, man, you've got some challenges. So it's only the beginning, as the old song goes. 3-1. It's a good start, but that's all it is. It's just a start. It's like Zach said last night. It's a 17-game schedule instead of a 16-game schedule. When it was 16 games, I used to do the same thing. Four quarters to the season. Four-game components to a season. Four-game quarters. The Bengals, first quarter, they're up 7-0. They have a winning record. Boy, second, third, and fourth quarter. And the fourth quarter's got five games in it. That's when the rubber meets the road. That's when we're going to find out what our who are and what are the Cincinnati Bengals. But the only way to build respect is to earn respect. The only way you earn respect is to win football games, and particularly to win football games you're supposed to win. Gabriel, Dave, after the first game, I was still worried a little bit about our linebackers. Not anymore. Bingo, Gabriel. Me neither. I think that they drafted... 2 years ago, they drafted three solid linebackers. They have a linebacker coach by the name of Al Golden, who played tight end at Penn State. He was a head coach in the college football ranks. He coached at Temple. He coached at University of Miami, Florida. This guy is a ball coach. He is now the linebacker coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. He is doing an unbelievable job with these young linebackers, in terms of breaking down what they're supposed to see, how they're supposed to see it. And Logan Wilson, this guy has so much athletic ability. I think that he still has some room to grow in terms of seeing it before it happens. Because Logan Wilson is so gifted physically that even if he doesn't see it soon, he can recover. He's got recoverability speed. He's unbelievably explosive and sudden. Once he starts seeing it before it happens, you talk about disruptive. This guy could be a nightmare. They've got some good linebackers. Total agreement. Akeem Davis Gaither. They've done Bailey, another linebacker that they picked up from Purdue. Those three guys they picked up in the draft. Bailey is a seventh round guy. They're all capable. Jordan Evans has been. He's the old blood. He hasn't even been there 5 years, and he's the youngest guy in the linebacker core. They have linebackers. In my mind, it's the most improved position that they have on the football team that they did not address in free agency or the draft this past season. The year before, they didn't get any in free agency, but they got three in the draft. And like I said before, drafting, then develop. They drafted, they put the bat on the ball, they found three guys that can play. Now Al Golden is developing them. Big, very big. Ryan Creamer, Dave, is Joseph Asai still in town post-surgery working with the training staff? Can he be in the classroom to prep for next year? Bingo, right on the money in both areas. Yes, yes, yes. Now, he may decide that he wants to, you know, if his doctor had somebody that the doctor has worked with post-surgery for the initial post-surgery rehabilitation, he may be doing some of that, but he's going to be in Cincinnati. And he is, you don't have to be in Cincinnati, be hitting your playbook. Everything now can be done electronically. I mean, guys get game plans, guys get game tape, you know, on their computers. I mean, it's everything is, you don't have to be in the building to keep up with the football team. And you can, what you can do also is Zoom one individual. Everybody's in the meeting room, all the linebackers. He can Zoom the meeting room and see the whole presentation, the whole installation, everything goes along with it. So, Brian, you make a great point, but you don't even have to really be in town to do it all these days. So I think that Joseph Asai is another young edge guy, linebacker slash defensive lineman, with a pass rush on the edge type guy who they're going to be able to develop. And he's out for the year, obviously, but what an impact he had. I mean, his first third play of his career, he sacks Brady. What? I mean, that dog will hunt. But then, not even 10 plays into his career, he has a broken hand, and then unfortunately an injury that requires a surgery to his leg. So, you know, he's on IR, but I think he's going to have a very bright future with this football team. Malcolm Wilhelm, what's up with Phillips in the return game? He seems very indecisive this year. You know, Malcolm, I think maybe indecisive. I think part of it is trying to do too much too. You know, I think he's made some decisions to bring the ball out where it's like, okay, don't press, don't try to do too much. And I do see what you're talking about with some of the indecisiveness. I think it all, you know, plays one hand off the other. And I think he's capable of much better. He has done much better. And I think as a whole, if there's one thing that you can count on, it's you can count on the fact that from week one to week 17, Darren Simmons will improve special teams play in all areas, all facets. Darren Simmons, special teams coach, assistant head coach, is as good as there is in the National Football League. And I can get 50 players that have played for Darren Simmons, and they'll all say exactly that. So right now, special teams have not made huge contributions other than McPherson, which is a very huge contribution, putting points on the board to victory. But the nuts and bolts of the special teams, I think, is going to make bigger contributions to games down the road than they have so far in this early stage of the season. Wes Wright, Lap, do you think Joey B, meaning Burrow, I'm sure, has a shot at the MVP if he keeps up the efficiency and the quarterback rating? Yeah. I mean, really, his quarterback rating going into the football game last night was 105.4, and he had a quarterback rating of over 132 last night. So he's creeping up on, you know, over 110. That's serious quarterback rating. That is efficiency. Two touchdown passes last night, give him 9 on the season, and he has 4 interceptions, better than a 2-to-1 ratio. When you consider the fact that he had 3 straight passes intercepted, which is mind-blowing, I mean, Joe Burrow would never expect that. We certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't see that. Take away that little stretch of whatever happened in those 3 straight passes. I mean, he's playing his quarterback rating would be up about 130 for the season or more. Yeah, I mean, nothing's impossible. I do know one thing. I know that all his teammates and the fans, the organization, they're happy that we have Joe Burrow here in Cincinnati pulling the trigger at the quarterback position. The dude is special. Last question. We appreciate you guys spending all the time with us that you did. We're going to end it on Sean here. Thoughts on Trey Wayne's return. Should we relax or worry? Well, like the great Aaron Rodgers said, R-E-L-A-X, relax. Trey Wayne's, he did get beaten deep. He was in good position. He did not find the football. And Trevor Lawrence made him pay. But Trey Wayne's hasn't played in, I mean, honestly, they signed him as a free agent, tears a pectoral, doesn't play, not this season, the entire season before, misses all of training camp, misses the entire season. Comes back this year, has hamstring issues during the course of training camp, so he's limited. This was the first game action since they signed him to a very healthy free agency contract. So this is a very, very small sample size, minuscule sample size. I think the coaches were happy to see Trey Wayne's be able to get out there, and watching him work in training camp, practices, and in limited amount in preseason games, the dude's got talent. Long, he's tall, he's long, he's rangy, can flip his hips, you know, can break on the football, route recognition needs probably to be sharpened a little bit. He hasn't played in a while, but he's a player. He's a player. Relax. Let's pump the brakes. His graph, once he starts getting snaps, repetition breeds comfort level, it's going to be like riding a bike. He's done it well before. Going to go straight north. Appreciate all you folks for joining us on this live podcast after the Bengals' victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars, 24-21, to improve their record to 3-1. 1-0 in the division. That one win is on the road. First place right now, as we speak, in the AFC North.
Hi, Dave Lapham here. Have you heard about In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, presented by First Star Logistics? Catch new episodes from the world of sports and broadcasting. Search for In the Trenches with Dave Lapham on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.